What is up, everybody? This is the recording of the interview I did with Aprone on June 29th, 2017. It is in five main parts. The first one is a short backstory on Aprone and what he was doing as a kid growing up. After that, we get into his programming outside of Swamp. Then we get more specifically into Swamp, the audio game, talking about his work on it, what's coming. There is some very interesting stuff that he decided to talk about during that section that I was completely unaware of, and it was really nice to learn about it. After that, we get into questions that people wanted me to ask him, and then finally we end with a section that is just quick takes, short little questions, to get to know him a little better. The second to last question of that section is probably one of the most amazing answers I received the entire interview from him, and it's definitely worth listening to the end to see how his brain works when it comes to a question that I made, which I thought was originally nonsense, which he then turned into a very in-depth, thoughtful response. So I hope you guys enjoy this. It will be up here for as long as the Swamp section is up on BSG for people to listen to, and I would definitely suggest listening to it all the way through. It is long. It's about an hour and 30 minutes long, but there is a lot of information about Swamp and other things he's working on that I'm not sure very many people are aware of, and you can definitely learn a lot from giving this a full listen. So, here's the interview. Where did you grow up? What was it like? Tell us a little bit about you when you were a little Aprone.
I grew up in Michigan, United States, for anybody who's listening that's outside of the United States. Pretty much grown up my entire life within the same general area, you know, like maybe 10 miles in any direction. Mm-hmm. Anytime I moved, I was still in that area. I am on the west side of Detroit, so I'm actually in the suburbs, but it's close enough to Detroit that people basically say it's Detroit if you live outside of Michigan.
Do you have to deal with everything where all the stereotypes with living in Detroit every time you tell someone?
Yeah, and you know, I wish the stereotypes were less accurate than they are, but some of them are pretty spot on.
Yeah, it's scary but true. When you were growing up, what were your hobbies and interests? What were you doing as you were growing up?
When I was a kid, it wasn't computering, which is, I guess that's a new word, right?
Yes, I just invented it.
Yes, very nicely done. It wasn't really using a computer because I didn't actually have a computer when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So for me, I spent a lot of my time drawing. Everybody thought I was going to be some sort of an artist or something, and it was just... I guess it was kind of what I did with any bit of free time that I had. And I liked, you know, all the usual stuff that somebody who winds up turning out like me, you know, for better or worse. Like, I took a lot of things apart. Mm-hmm. I like to play with Legos. You know, all the stuff that seems to turn people down the dark path of maybe one day making games or building stuff.
A childhood without Legos is not a childhood.
I agree.
Very strongly believe in that. When did the computers come in?
About
how old?
I think I was about 11 or 12. I was in junior high. I think I was in my last year of junior high when my family got a computer. And even then, it was a family computer. It was like in our mm-hmm. living room, so it mm-hmm. was shared among everyone. And you know, as a kid, obviously, I didn't get to spend that much time on it compared to, you know, what nowadays when people say they use a computer. I mean. I think I was actually regulated to like an hour a day or something.
Yep. That's the way it used to be. Nowadays there's no regulation. It's just wide open. All right. So when was your first attempt or endeavor into programming? And was it a success or did you fail at it?
Well, when I was first going into high school, there was a kid in a typing class, because I don't know if typing classes are still a thing, but typing classes were a thing at the time.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
You just learn how to type.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, it seems like everybody knows how to type by the time they're five, so you wouldn't need it in school.
Right.
But there was a kid sitting near me, and he was able to type in commands that would cause the computer to make beeps of different pitches, and everybody just thought that was the coolest thing. He was scripting. I don't even remember what scripting language he was using, but he was scripting, and it was literally the extent of what he knew how to do, was just have it play different beeps. It was maybe mm-hmm. 10 different beeps. And at that time frame, I mean, to anybody who's significantly younger than me, they're not going to really understand what it was like back then versus now. I mean, back then, you didn't have half your class that knew how to program. Mm-hmm. You couldn't just jump on the internet and learn a language. I mean, you had to buy actual books. The people who did know how to program, I mean, not even everybody had a computer in their house.
Yeah.
So if you didn't know how to program, you were a wizard. You know, you were magic, literally magic. So that really got me into it. And he showed me what he knew, which wasn't much, so that took like 10 minutes. He only knew how to make beeps on the computer, but it got me on that path. And the first thing I ever remember doing with that as I started to learn how to do stuff is I made a little screensaver. And that makes me seem old, too. It literally was from the time frame where you had screensavers. Yep. So, yeah.
I remember going online image would to burn into the special screensavers.
Yep. Because if you didn't, it would burn the image into your monitor. Yep. You had to actually have screensavers. It was just like three triangles, I think, that bounced around the screen. And I remember being very happy with myself that I pulled that off. And it's laughable to even talk about it now. But that's the earliest programming-related thing I can ever remember doing.
Well, you have to start somewhere.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There's always a seed that gets planted and then it just grows from there. Now, what got you not just into the audio game community, but actively developing more than one game for essentially blind people, such a small niche group of people who are going to be playing a very small selection of audio games? What got you pulled in and then kept you around in this community, which can be ungood at times?
Ungood, yes. What pulled me in was kind of an accident. I knew a person that had been in a car accident and he couldn't really move his body properly. And kind of as a side note, I used to come up with little gimmicky things just to entertain myself. And at one point there was a little online multiplayer game where you just run around and shoot at each other. And I had built a helmet and a camera rig so that my cat could play the game. And it was just a game. The cat didn't know what it was doing. You know, from the cat's perspective, it was chasing a dot around, because a computer program would put the dot where, if the cat looked at it, it would actually be aiming at another player.
And, oh, I see.
You know, handled it that way. So the cat didn't really know what it was doing, but people thought it was funny. And I remember one day just stopping and thinking to myself, you know, I just spent X amount of hours making something so that my cat could play a game, you know, and I at least know of someone. I didn't know him very well personally, but I knew of someone that, you know, had physical limitations and could not actually play games and things. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, why am I not building something so that this guy or other people who have some sort of a limitation could be having fun, you know, enjoying themselves? I'm wasting the abilities that I have. So I was online looking up One Switch Gaming, which, for anyone who doesn't know, is a type of game built specifically for people with physical disabilities. And while I was looking around on there and talking to a few people, I saw a link on the side of the page. It was just, you know, like one of those advertisement links or visit our affiliates or our friends or whatever. And it was for the audiogames.net forum. And I clicked on that and looked around and started chatting on the forum. I don't remember what I asked or said or did something, but I started chatting with Dark, which anybody who's on the forum knows who Dark is.
Yep.
I had so much fun talking to him that I just stuck around. It sounds bad, but when I was on the One Switch Gaming forums, it takes them so long to type messages back that you couldn't have engaging conversations on a forum. I mean, as far as I know, they're blinking to type out letters, and they might only be able to do it one time a day with help. Yeah, so it's mean that I picked one group over the other for that reason, but it's hard if you don't have feedback. And in the audio games community, I could get feedback. Mm-hmm. So that's what got me here. It was completely by accident. And then I think at first I made a game just to see if I, you know, just to try it. You know, hey, it's something new I had never really thought about. I'll give it a shot. And I made a game. And then I think when I realized that people enjoyed it, and, you know, you're in some way improving someone's day or life or whatever, then you feel like you're helping. And we're all just looking for some way to help. It sounds sappy, but if you think about it, you could ask a complicated question on the forum, something that somebody's going to have to, like, look up. Might take them half an hour's worth of work to look it up, but someone's going to do it. They got nothing out of it other than the feeling that they helped someone. And we get stuff like that. There's examples of that all the time. It happens so often we don't even realize it, but we all just, we want to find some way to help.
It's a very good thing you ran across Dark and not some of the other people on the phone that would have immediately turned you off.
Yeah.
And you would have been more willing to wait a day for a message on a different forum. Now, what is, for you personally, what do you think are the magic ingredients to make the perfect game for not just an audio game, but in general for any game? I mean, specifically audio because that's what you're working in, but what does it take to make that perfect game?
Boy, I almost feel like I don't want to answer this question because people are going to be like, well, that's not your games. Like, you know, you're clearly failing at your own thing. I personally think that the best games are the ones that have a very loose hold on the player. You don't, they don't lock you in with too many rules. They want you to, you know, it should allow you to be able to set your own goals.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out Minecraft, even though it's probably a bad example to throw out since it's not an audio game.
But it is a perfect example.
Right, and everybody knows at least about the game.
Mm-hmm.
So what's nice about that one is there's not even a win and lose condition other than starving to death and you die. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get that's a losing condition, but you're free to simply make up your own rules. If you decide, if to you it's fun to just grow crops or tend to animals, then fine. Mm-hmm. If it's fun for you to build a building, and again, you can build, it's completely freeform. You build it however you want. There's no right or wrong way. That those are the kind of games where the person will come back and continue to play it year after year for decades. Yep. If you have a game that just has a great single player storyline or something, maybe they're going to come back in a year just to replay it. But after they've put however many hours in to get to the end, you're kind of done.
Exactly.
You're tied. So I think that that is the recipe for a good game, is make it a framework so the person can have fun, but then let them have as much freedom as possible.
Yes, let them continually set their own goals as they see them, which will be different for each person, ensuring that everyone has a different outlook and they have, well, different goals they want to reach, and that can last essentially forever. And I'm not up to date on Minecraft, but isn't it unique in that the graphics for Minecraft are not anything extremely special? It's more based around the gameplay.
Yeah, it's very old school type graphics where it's the most basic of colors and shapes.
Yeah.
And they did that on purpose. It forces you to not just, you know, be impressed by the eye candy, you know, the great graphics. It's the gameplay. You're right. It's all gameplay.
That's, I argue with people about this with audio games all the time, where I'm not so interested in someone having the best audio effects or, you know, 3D audio or whatever. I'm way more interested in something with lower quality audio, but a much better gaming experience with, like what you're saying, more stuff to do. Which, that seems to get lost a lot in audio games, where people want to focus more on bringing you the best audio and not the best content.
Well, mainstream has the same struggle. Everybody seems to focus on graphics, or at least a large enough percentage of the group that it kind of messes it up for everybody else who just wants content.
Yep, that's exactly true. Probably will never change. So we all know from your many posts on audiogames.net that you have a very busy life, but if you had your unlimited time to code, what would you want to be spending your time on? Either new, current projects, something completely unrelated to audio, anything. If you had the choice, what would you be sinking all of your time into work on or create?
If I had unlimited time to code, I am pretty sure I would spend most of my time on different simulators, like artificial life simulators. They always have appealed to me. It's so hard to explain to other people exactly what I even mean by that.
I was just about to ask you something, to try and explain that.
Yeah, something where you set up a relatively simple set of rules, and by the computer being able to simulate how those rules would interact over, you know, millions, billions, or trillions of iterations, you can get very complicated behavior. I love to sit around and see how those things unfold, and they tie in really well with real life.
Yeah.
What would be a good example? If you had, maybe I should backtrack on that. I don't know. It's hard to come up with a good example. It's tricky.
I think
I've had these simulator. I've built simulations that would, for example, try to simulate teamwork between two AIs. And the idea was, can two AIs that are essentially competing for resources, is there ever a way that naturally, you know, without me telling it to do it, is there ever a mm-hmm. way that they would come to an agreement and work cooperatively? And only one time have I ever pulled this off, but it did actually happen. And if those types of very complex behaviors can yeah. evolve from very simple rules, then you know it's possible in nature, in our world as well. And those are the kind of things that I really get impressed with. I've put literally thousands of hours into simulations to try to figure out how to fix humanity. So far, we're doomed. But that's for a different day.
Oh, all the SWAT players are going to be so mad to hear you say that.
Oh, yeah.
The thousands of hours into AI.
Yep.
But that is...
If,
to be honest, I didn't expect an answer anything like that. That is completely, almost mind-blowing.
Well, that's one of those selfish things, you yeah. know, that appeals to me. It doesn't help other people, but, you know, that's what I would probably do if I had unlimited time. Now, if we're talking games, though, it would have to be some sort of, like, a massive strategy game. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure I would start off with the noble idea, you know, fit with my own previous advice. It'd be something open like Minecraft.
Yeah.
And then I know myself well enough that I would add more and more strategic elements until basically everybody said this is a strategy game, you know, because I would make that mistake, and that's what I would do.
Now, this kind of leads into the your old post on the forums. There was a lot of talk about a giant RPG game that you were working on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone very silent lately, and I'm curious to know if there's any more information you have about it, what it was, active work on it, anything that's an update since the couple years ago I heard something about it?
Well, I think if you're willing to sit through a little bit of backstory, I think I can kind yeah. of explain why that went silent.
Yeah.
Castaways 2, some people have played it, some people haven't. It's a beta that I
yeah.
had posted so that it's, I don't even think it's on my website, but I mean, some people know yeah, about it and have downloaded it.
Yep.
And I was trying out a very odd way of having the game set up, which some people love, most people hated it. So that needs to be completely Oh, yeah. You know, you always hope that it's kind of flipped the other way. Like, most people love it, some people hate it, but, you know, it doesn't always work.
Good luck with that, ever.
So, yeah, good luck. So I need to, at some point, get back and redesign that game, but... The big grand goal that I had, because every developer gets, you know, sucked into this, where you have an idea for a game and then you say, well, hey, I've got these six features that I can put in this game. And then, you know what, I can add one more. So before I start actually making, I can put one more. And then one more comes up. And pretty soon you've got 45 new ideas that you thought of for this little game. And it's not a little game anymore. You've doomed yourself. Well, what I wanted to do in this doomed brainstorming thing that never, you know, it collapsed in on itself. I wanted Castaways 2 to be a more grand version of what it was, where it would be a single unified world. Everybody would build everything together, and you would be able to actually build in a zoomed out way like you can in Castaways and Castaways 2 currently, but you could go into it like you can walk around in Swamp, and you literally would be able to walk around all these towns and villages. Then the RPG game that was going to come in was going to take the world that players had already built. So it wouldn't be a world I designed. It would be using the existing cities and things, and an engine would basically put in NPCs and quest stories and other things that would apply custom to these player-built things. So, you know, so you play one game where you're running around and you're doing farming and you're buying and selling goods, and you're doing everything you do in Castaways 2, but then you can say, I'm going to load up this other game, and now I'm in the exact same world, but I'm an adventurer hunting down mercenaries or whatever. So because Castaways 2 flopped as hard as it did, it really shook up everything I was going to do with the RPG. So that's why that whole thing has kind of gone silent, because I haven't figured out a good way to fix the first game before I can even dream about working in the second one.
That does sound like an absolutely amazing experience, though. Because as I'm understanding it, as people build different cities and stuff, the game would change each time.
Yes.
That is... Well, that's your recipe for always
creating
content, what people are doing.
Like, like so many developers before me, don't pat me on the back until I make it.
Because yeah, exactly.
Anybody can dream, right? Anybody
but
can sit around and just daydream.
It is a very good idea. So since you were saying that Castaways was such a flop for you, what program that you've done or game or anything are you most proud of so far?
Boy, I kind of have to go back to the life simulators thing if I'm going off of what I'm most proud of. Yeah. With that one, it's not a single thing, you know, if I'm talking about a life simulator as my favorite, I'm not actually talking about a specific life simulator I made. I'm kind of clumping them all together into a single group and saying, if I look at them all together, then that would probably be my thing I'm most proud of, because I feel like I have gained a better understanding of the world around me as a result of those.
Oh, I see.
Simple things like, what I like about them is that you will you take very simple rules, you'll get some kind of very complicated behavior out of it, and usually you're a little taken back by it. And then when you really stop and think about it, it makes sense, and you don't know why you hadn't jumped to that conclusion in the first place. And I love that, because it helps you realize that the answers are actually true. It's just you hadn't gotten there on your own without help. And it's simple things like how cultures or organizations or religions or literally any type of a group, if they're more defensive in nature, you'll have more diversity. And by defensive, I mean if they're focused more on preserving their own group rather than converting others, then the entire environment will become more diverse. You'll have many more groups.
Yeah.
And the flip side is if they're more offensive in nature, you eventually work toward a uniform group.
I see.
Little things like that, which have been simulated over many thousands of...
It makes perfect sense. Hours.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense. It's just one of those... I'm just coming up with one example of many, but that's one of those things that when I saw it simulated many, many times and realized that it is a natural result, regardless of how I alter the rules, that's how it always works out, which means in nature, things are going to converge on those types of conclusions. And, you know, it makes you look at the world a little different as these sort of realizations pile up. And, yeah, I find them very, very interesting.
So one thing I'm wondering now is how much has this changed your outlook on just how you go about your days, life, how you see people? Is all this work you put into this actually changed your outlook and the way you see people in a tangible way that you can actually notice?
I suppose it makes me inside, it sounds bad to say it, but it makes me seem or feel in some like people are more not determined or fated, but maybe people are more like machines than we realize.
Yeah.
You know, there's a predictability to it that we don't necessarily notice, but something like a computer simulation, or if there's some advanced intelligence we build one day, it's going to be painfully aware they're going to be painfully aware of the fact that we are machines, and we're not going to see it ourselves.
Yep.
You know, it makes me wonder if my toaster ever thinks, I'm just a machine. Yeah, it probably doesn't have those thoughts. No, we don't either.
Hopefully it doesn't have those thoughts. Now, I'm assuming I might know the answer to this, but what takes up most of your time with programming? Is it these simulations that you run, or is it gaming projects, or what?
I think most of my time is just experimenting and playing around with stuff. I'll get the craziest idea, be, you know, at work or something, and I'll think, it might be fun to have a... Or I wonder what the mechanics would be like on a puzzle where, depending on what key you hit, it's actually moving, like you're trying to move a single particle from point A to point B, but instead of saying, all right, I want to move up, down, left, and right, any key that you hit on the keyboard is some unknown line. It has a slope that you don't know of, so you're actually moving one direction or the other on a slope. So, you know, you'd have to find your way to actually get to that path just through guessing and checking of keys and stuff. Now, it would be the most horrible, boring game ever, but the thought crossed my mind, so I'll come home and I'll spend an hour or two and I'll actually code something up, try it, and say, yeah, this is terrible, and then I never touch it again. And I'll accumulate, you know, hundreds of these very tiny programs that do one specific thing that turned out to be either complete garbage or just not what I thought they were going to be, and they just pile up.
Well, you could eventually hit gold with something and then
Right. Every now and then. Yeah. Every now and then something's good, and then I build a game around it. And, yeah.
It's like, what is it? Sturgis's Law, that 90% of everything is crap and 10% is good?
Sounds about right. Odds.
So what is a day like for you? From waking up to going to sleep, what takes up most of your time? Not computering, as I said before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coining that word right now. But in general, what what's a day like?
Well, you know, every day is a little different, but I probably wake up around noon. I work midnight, so, you know, I sleep in. I will spend the first half of the day feeling tired, and maybe, you know, I got to run some errands. Well, usually got to get ready for the day, run some errands, maybe do some things around the house. I try to spend time with my nephews. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old nephew, and probably 2 or 3 times a week, my wife and I go over there and basically spend the day with them, or have them come over here, spend the day with them here. Then, as we get toward the later half of the day, I will continue to feel tired all day, and try to get a nap. You know, I really seem old when I have to take a nap at some point in the day.
I'm used to it. I talk to Jimmy all the time. He's always napping.
Yep. And, you know, at some point in there, I'll spend time on the computer and maybe work on something, but, you know, for little bits of time here and there. Maybe watch a little TV, but not usually. And then it's time to get ready and go back to work.
And then if you're lucky, you have more time to work on something like Swamp, right?
Yes. if it fits in there, then yes.
Which, actually, now we're going to move ahead to the part that is specifically about Swamp. And, this is probably going to be the more in-depth part, where I might make up questions as we go, as well as what you say makes me think of stuff, but I'll try and stick mainly to the questions I have outlined. What is the main story behind Swamp, from its first seedling of an idea to the insane thing it's become now?
It's a little hard to remember all the details here, but it was some sort of a conversation on the audiogames.net forum. I don't remember who all asked, but at some point someone asked me to put together a horror-themed game for Halloween. And this was maybe a week away from Halloween, so it was a very short notice. I had, at that point, already a reputation of tossing out small games very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what everybody was shooting for.
When about was that?
That was, boy, how many years ago? Five or 6 years ago? I don't know. I'd have to actually go back and check.
Someone has recently said that Swamp came out in 2006. And me and Hannibal have told them, well, Hannibal's told them, and I agree with Hannibal that they are incorrect. But they swear it came out in 2006. So your timeline sounds much more realistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was probably about 5 years ago. But anyway, so that was offered, or that suggestion was offered. I tossed some kind of little game together, and it had to do with running around. There was like two shacks on the map, so two little buildings. You had to run between the two, and I think you had one or maybe two guns in the game. Unlimited ammo. Yeah, I mean, you had to reload, but it was basically unlimited ammo. And there were, if I remember right, 5 zombies, and every time you killed them, one would respawn. And then ever so slowly, it would introduce maybe a 6th, a 7th, an 8th. And I think it got up to 12, and that was the limit. And it was just a little single-player game. That was it. And it was actually based off of one of the many tiny little things that I've thrown together, where I was trying to brainstorm ways of doing a first-person perspective game in audio. I know, yeah, people have done them. There's like Shades of Doom, and there's a... You know, there's others that are already out there, but I don't actually play audio games. Yeah. And I kind of do that on purpose, because if I play a game that someone else made and they have a certain way that they handle the problem, no matter how hard I try, my brain is probably going to keep taking me back to how they solved it. And I don't want that influence. I want to come up with something completely on my own. Right. Now, it might be the same method, but it'll be by accident.
Yeah,
but I want my own completely unique way that I thought up to solve the problem, because that's the only way we're ever going to figure out what's best, is if we have a lot of different approaches to the same problem. And so I threw that together. People loved it. Somebody had said something along the lines of multiplayer, wouldn't it be cool? I don't think they were even slightly serious. So I think it was maybe a week after Halloween, I surprised them by releasing a patch that actually did have multiplayer. And that was when we first got the Kymart. It was a map that pretty much was just the Kymart. From there, it spiraled, and we ended up with the craziness that we have now. It just more and more got added.
I did not know it went multiplayer that quick. Did you ever imagine it would turn into what it did now?
Not at all.
No?
No. I can't say never anymore, just because I've been forced to kind of change that view with, you know, because of Swamp. I totally blame Swamp for this. But before Swamp, I never built my games with a long-term goal in mind. And I think there's probably public posts that I've made that flat out say, you know, I fully expect if I release a game, people will get some enjoyment out of it, and 6 months later, it'll vanish and no one will ever play it again, because it'll be replaced by something better. That's how I've always gone with it. But that's somewhat because I have a mainstream game, more of a mainstream game background. You know, if I make little indie games before I came to the audio games community, if I make little indie games for sighted players, well, you know, I release my game around the world, 700,000 other games were released on the same day. Yeah. So if you get anybody to play your stuff, they're going to play it for a very short period of time, and then they're going to move on. So I never expected that things would have the lifespan that they have. And Swamp was no different. You know, I thought, whatever, people are going to play it, and then they're going to, you know, it's going to fade off into infinity or wherever these forgotten games go.
Did you expect people to have over 1 year playtime? Because I know you recently had to change the progress file, I think, to allow that. Because it wasn't even built into it. So I'm assuming you had absolutely no foresight in people's addiction.
No. And I never thought that there'd be people. I mean, there's been these milestones, even just with people reaching different levels in the game. I mean, when the game was first even introduced levels, I think I had it worked out. If I'm remembering right, I think I had it worked out that people would only maybe be able to get up to about a level 100. You know, maybe 100, and that was how everything was built, so that you kind of unlocked everything by the time you hit level 100. And now it might actually have been more like 80 or something, but it was in that range, in that ballpark. And people hit that really fast. Like, I think I went to sleep, woke up the next morning, and you know, I'm a level 150, and everything's unlocked. What do I do? So I'm like, all right, you know, rethink it. And it was an excuse to add more maps. I'd add another map, and I'd kind of space out the levels a little bit, and then. Couple days later, usually in less time than it took me to make the new content, people would have already advanced levels. There was a nightmare of rebalancing in that time period. I was trying to figure out, how do I slow these people down? This is crazy, you know? I'm not used to this. In mainstream games, you don't have people playing 24 hours a day. And now, well, I can't even say now. You know, then we hit, there was another milestone where the person finally passed level 1,000. And then there was people that had passed level 3,000 and 5,000. And we actually hit the limit. And people were pissed at me when we hit the limit. They thought I did it on purpose. That what happens is the variables that literally hold how much experience points you have, there's a limit to how the largest number you can fit into a variable, depending on the type of variables. Yeah. And It escapes me now. It's like 64 billion or trillion or what, something. Yep. It's a very large number. And to get to the next level, you would have to go higher than that variable can even hold. Yeah. So the game just doesn't increment your level because it can't. And they're mad at me. Like, I got threats over that. People were pissed. I'm like, it's not my fault. Like, it's how it works. And, you know, then I had to do the very unpopular rescaling where I think a level 1,000 is now essentially the top again, because I had to scale everything. And
pretty much.
People were mad about that.
Yeah, I quit playing for a while after that, to be completely honest. I just got a lot to where I could do warehouses, and I just said, oh, crap. Now I can't. I don't want to work it back.
Oh, yeah. Very unpopular move on my part.
I like the 2 points for every one level, up to 1,000. I haven't gotten to 1,000 yet, so I can't tell you how much I'll hate it when I get there, but I'm assuming a lot. When you get a point every 5 levels, I believe it is. How much backlash did you get? Did you get anything privately that was nasty, or was it all mainly what we saw in the forums with everyone?
Almost everything I ever get that's nasty is private. Because because if a person posts something publicly, as we've seen, then someone's going to come out and they're going to be defending me. At some point, someone's going to come out. So if they do it privately, they never have to worry about reprisals. They can say the nastiest thing. I have been threatened in so many ways. I've had people saying that they hope my family dies, and there's no limit on the things people say in private. But once it's public, it's usually like the PG version of what they might have said in private. Mm-hmm. And even then, it's a fraction. So every one complaint you see about me on public forums, there's probably 50 that were far harsher that came privately.
It's just terrible. Is that one of the reasons you've decided at points to completely step back from Swamp and just say, to hell with it for now?
Yeah. I hate to say it, you know, because everybody's supposed to have a thick skin, especially if you're a developer. But at a certain point, when it's day in and day out, you get to a point where you're like, you know what? Screw it. if you're given the choice, all right, I can go outside and cook some food on on the fire pit or something, relax, or I can spend 3 hours and add a little bit more code for the people that, you know, are complaining, and then in the process, let me check the 6 new messages that came in while I was coding.
Yeah.
Five of them are death threats. And then the sixth one is a person asking for the MP5 that vanished. They want a replacement.
Oh man,
you gotta choose between those two things. Well, you know what? Some days I'm just going to go outside.
Yeah, exactly. I can't say I blame you. I didn't realize it was that nasty of how much stuff you're getting privately.
I'm making light of it. Not, for the last few years, it hasn't been as bad. There was a time in there where it was really bad.
Oh, yeah. It got ugly.
Yeah. And, well, actually, before it became paid, it was its ugliest.
Was it?
That was part of the reason that really pushed me. Into making it paid. I figured I'm going to get rid of a lot of these crappiest people, because if they're complaining that much, they're not going to pay me, right?
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah.
They kept paying me, you know, so that they could continue to play the game and complain.
I know a lot of people hate it, but I really believe that for online games, you have to have some sort of check to keep people from hacking and trying to break the game.
Yeah.
Because they ruin the experience for every single other person who wants to play. They're completely selfish and just assholes.
Oh, I agree.
What is your opinion on how long and how much people do play Swamp? Because we're talking, some people will be on for 12 hours straight playing nonstop. Is that something you can wrap your head around, or are you just awed by it?
I can wrap my head around it. I'm torn. One side of me wants to say this is a bad thing, they should be out doing something else. You know, play outside, be productive, you know, write a song, sing a song, whatever. Just do something, you know, besides just sitting in front of a computer all day. But if a person is spending that much time on it, it means it is benefiting them in some way, or they wouldn't be doing it. You know, maybe it's being used for social interaction. Maybe it's being used and it's triggering something in their brain that they can't do in real life. Like, let's say you can't just go out and explore your neighborhood, maybe, but you can go out and you can explore these maps, or, you know, there's going to be something, the feeling of collecting. I think a lot of the people in the community, including myself, are considered poor. So we don't have a lot of stuff, but you can collect things like crazy in a video game. I mean, there's always going to be something that's going to appeal to that person if they're spending that amount of time playing. So I think it's probably a good thing overall.
Kind of amazing that something that started out so small has turned into something that brings, I mean, they're not all in once, but hundreds of people so much enjoyment. I mean, if you added up all the hours of all the people that are playing Swamp, it would just be a number that would be hard to wrap one's brain around. All from suggestion on the forums. It's just amazing.
Which just goes to show, if you ever have a suggestion for anybody, it doesn't hurt to say it.
Yeah,
you know, because
exactly.
The worst they can say is no, and best case scenario, you get something amazing out of it.
Yeah, it's very true. What are the biggest things you see with Swamp, including stuff that you know, if you change it, everyone is going to throw a fit and cry? Stuff that could be changed, maybe you don't want to, you're holding back because of the reaction, but what are the issues that you think do need to be fixed going forward with it?
Oh boy, I wish I knew how to fix these things. I think the biggest issue is probably just escalation of player ability, maybe. Levels obviously can skyrocket, as we talked about earlier. You know, I can go to bed and I can wake up the next morning and suddenly there's a level 1,000 player.
Yeah.
That's an exaggeration, but people can accumulate massive amounts of skill points, weapons, ammunition, armor. They can become like gods, you know, running around shooting stuff. And there's always good, no matter how much you throw another challenge in, right? A stronger zombie or a more difficult environment, whatever, there's always going to be a point where then they are going to catch up to that and then surpass it. And then they're bored because they don't have the challenge. I actually thought that when people hit the point where they were bored, they would make a new character and then have the challenge all over again. But that's crazy. Apparently that's craziness.
I'm telling you, that's not happening.
Yeah, that's craziness.
I called you dirty names when I saw that on the forums. You said, well, if you reach a point where you can no longer play the game because the zombies are too strong, start over. And I had a lot of very bad things to say about you with that suggestion.
See, I guess it's just, you know, I'm putting my own thought process, I'm pushing that onto other people, and that's not the way it works. Like, if I'm playing Minecraft, right, and I'm on a, let's say I'm on a server and I'm playing Minecraft, and I have this amazing fortress built up and I have everything I could ever need, but it gets to a point where I just have everything and no one can stop me, like, eh, whatever, and I throw myself into some lava and I die and I start over with nothing, and I'm totally fine with that. Like, I enjoy the starting over. Apparently most people do not enjoy that at all. So yeah, I'm learning.
For me, I guess it's the buildup of hours putting into something and then throwing it out. It's very hard for me to do.
I guess I feel a sense of excitement that I only get if I know that it can be gone at any time. I keep jumping back to Minecraft, but it's like the most open world type game that is out there that I have played, at least.
I wish I could play it because the sound of it sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'll be on a server and I'm the only guy. Like, people ridicule me and think it's hilarious that I'm the only guy who's building a giant ship out of wood on like a server where if a fire gets started, you can't put it out. So that if anything catches part of that ship on fire, all the hours I put into it, it's going to burn up. It's going to be gone. And to me, that makes it more interesting to build it. All the work that goes into building it, because I know at any time this thing could burn down before I'm even done with it. Yeah. It's just that fleeting moment of enjoyment that I get to see it if it's done, if I'm able to do it, and then something will destroy it. Even another player, somebody's going to burn it down. It's my way of playing, and unfortunately, it doesn't mesh up with a lot of other people, so I shouldn't be using that as the solution to these problems, because other people aren't going to go for it. So, you know, there's the escalation of players' abilities. The other issue that is a smaller of the two issues is that if you are in a mainstream game that's multiplayer, most of them obviously are not persistent. You know, the ones that are kind of famous, World of Warcraft and other things, where your progress stays forever. There are so many players. I mean, we're talking like millions of players, or even on smaller games, hundreds of thousands of players, that no matter how high you are and how low this other guy is, there's going to be a large group of people that are your peers. If you're a level 5, there's going to be a lot of people that are levels 4, 5, and 6. Tons. If you're a level 1,000, there's going to be a whole lot. Well, most of those games only go up to like 100. But let's see, or a level 100, there's going to be a ton of people who are 90 and 100. So you can always stay with your group. Swamp's community is much smaller. Even when it was at its heyday, where there was 90 people, 90 to 100 people signed on at any given time. Like, even back in those days, that's not a lot of people, really. So you have people who are fairly new, level 20s, running around, and they're fighting shoulder to shoulder in a mission with a guy who's level 980. Well, you know, it's going to be so one-sided. You can't really contribute that much if you're so, you know, outclassed by your teammates. And then player versus player, like PvP combat becomes all kinds of problems, since everybody is it's such vastly different areas. I mean, it's really, really hard to balance these people that are all thrown together in the same place because they're just so drastically different. And I haven't found a solution to that either, because the mainstream solution is just to have enough players that you don't have that problem.
And that's not, I don't think that'll ever be the case with any audio game, because we don't have a big enough pool of people to pull from to bring into a game.
Nope, not at all.
Yeah, as it stands now, it's pretty much bring low-level people on a mission, they hide in the truck, and someone that's a higher level completes the mission to help them get some levels to then, hopefully, in the future, be at the same level range so they can do it as well. But, yeah, don't ask me how to fix it. That's where you need to be the developer.
Oh, yay! Yay me!
What are some of the things you regret with Swamp so far?
The regret would just have to be me kind of caving in and going along with what people suggest. If I have a design decision where one side ticks off a whole bunch of people, I would usually avoid it just because I want less people angry and throwing a fit.
Yeah.
Or if, you know, a lot of people suggested something, they want something added to the game or changed about the game, once enough people group together and it's a loud enough complaint, I tended to do it.
Mm-hmm.
In general, you want to keep your player base happy. Well,
yeah.
When you take a game and you constantly are adding to it, subtracting to it, changing it in ways it wasn't really meant for,
yeah,
and you add to it as time goes on, you just have a bunch of spaghetti code. And then it makes it 10 times harder to add anything, especially adding things without breaking other things.
Yep.
Yeah, and then you get this weird, non-cohesive mess where right now there's features in the game that are like partially complete. The quest system is a disaster because, there's like 6 quests or something people ever get, and not all the missions they're supposed to be mission settings where there's raiders, and those aren't working now because they got broken by something else, and it's just, it's such a jumbled mess.
Yep.
But I do have to say, though, that as much as I don't like how it became a jumbled mess, you know, by following everybody's suggestions, the fact that, like, 6 years later, I'm still being asked questions about Swamp and I'm doing, like, an interview here means that the direction I went wasn't exactly wrong. I didn't prefer it. It's got problems. But who knows? The game might not have gotten this far had I just done what I wanted to do and ignored other people. Yeah,
that is true.
You have to
pay attention to the player base. Because enough stuff that they like, and you don't have a player base anymore.
Exactly.
And then we wouldn't be here having this talk. As long as the good things outweigh the negatives, it's always, we'll put up with a lot to have a game to play, because there isn't a lot out there for us to play. I don't ever hear much about, from any audio game developer, what's coming out. It's always seems to be top secret. Do you have anything that you want to talk about, that you have plans that you want to release, something that's people might be excited to hear about, just any new content or anything that involving Swamp that you have planned that you are working on or want to start working on to come out in the game?
I, like everybody else, I had some information that I was keeping top secret for a very long time, but I think it's actually been long enough that I might as well... Well, it's been long enough and I've changed directions enough times since then that I might as well kind of come clean and fill everybody in on what had happened before.
Okay.
I haven't had new Swamp plans in a long time. Some people are going to remember the very last game update. I don't even remember what version we're on, but it's been a long time that we've been on this version.
I'm not either.
But there are players who have somehow magically memorized every version and what was changed, and I don't know how they do it, but they will remember there was a moment where the server went down, and when it came back up, there were days of really weird activity. We had bugs that hadn't existed in a long time. We had players' records that were corrupted. There was a bunch of mess. And what had happened was a power surge had corrupted... A power surge in my house had actually damaged the server and had corrupted a lot of the files on the hard drive. I'm sure I'm not the only person who procrastinates backing things up, like to multiple locations. I had backups, but the backups, at least at that time, the most recent backups were all backed up onto the same hard drive, just in a different location. So, you know, it damaged stuff. And even when I combined the files from the two locations, you know, there some of them I was able to piece together good files versus bad files, but I didn't have a complete set. So what I had to do was go back to older versions that were backed up of the server and basically, you know, patch those in and then try to make changes to get it functioning again. And I lost all of the client code for that version. So I couldn't, it was bad. I couldn't say, okay, well, now let me code the next version of Swamp, because I don't have the current one to go off of. I'd have to go back at least one version before that, if not more, to get a completely uncorrupted copy. And how many thousands of hours might have gone into getting it from that version to even what we have now? And that's if I remember everything that was changed. So, boy, that made it really hard to go back. And that's why we haven't had anything in a long time. that stopped the normal flow of updates. For a while there, we did have updates every so often, and if there wasn't an update in a while, you could usually hear that one was in the works. But yeah, that pretty much killed all of that, because I just didn't know what to do. Maybe 6 or 7 months ago or something, I started working on Swamp as a completely new project, and I was doing this in secret. I think like 2 people knew about it or something. And by new project, I mean I started from scratch. I was going to remake the entire game using some better techniques, and obviously be more organized, because I would see what's it supposed to be now and build it all as a single project, rather than start with, you know, the 1 week Halloween thing and then add to it slowly. Yeah, exactly. So there'd be no spaghetti coated, and I could add improvements. There's a lot of things that I did because they were fast at the time, and they don't work well when you actually have a bunch of people playing multiplayer. So I was going to do everything nice. And I had a whole new engine that I had designed. I put a ton of time into how the sounds would be handled, how movement code would be handled. I mean, I love to reinvent the wheel. I do not like to use other people's code. So that some people just think I'm an idiot for doing that. But I will write my own code for how do you pan sounds to get, you know, to sound 3D. I don't just, you know, use the existing things that are floating around
out there.
That
makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, it's just how I've always done it. I mean, I started off programming before you could just go online and grab other people's code, so that's exactly how I continued. So I worked on this for a while. This new engine, I'm just going to call it the new engine for now, it was working so much better than Swamp that it was actually kind of embarrassing to go back and look at the Swamp engine. I mean, just in terms of how much faster everything was running, sound sounded better. The original Swamp uses, as I'll call it, as the crow flies sounds, where if there's a wall to your right and there's a sound on the other side of the wall, you hear it muffled straight through the wall instead of in front of you. Like, even if there's a doorway in front of you. In real life, the sound would be coming through that doorway.
Yep.
Well, the new engine handles it properly, whereas the old one did not. Also, syncing between zombies was essentially completely fixed. You didn't have these problems where I'm shooting at a zombie in one side of the room and, your buddy sees it on the other side. And tons and tons and tons of improvements. And I started to get to the point where, you know, having this be a rebuild of Swamp is a terrible idea. I'm going to be wasting so many of the features that this new engine has by turning it into the old game. Like, another example is maps with multiple levels. Can't do that in original Swamp. It's all an illusion. Like, if you are on the roof of a building, it's all two-dimensional. It's just that the roof is adjacent to or whatever the part that's supposed to be underneath it, and the hope is that players don't really notice that as you run around. But there is no actual up and down. So this one has up and down. The maps, it's a completely different way of designing the map, so the entire game could simply be one map. You don't need you know, what is Swamp has how many maps? Sheesh, got a lot of maps. Five main maps, three sub maps, a bunch of other stuff, but it could just be a single map. Right. Oh, yeah. All kinds of things. So if that's the case, it's such a waste. I mean, I'm wasting so many things. And I started to think, well, you know what? I should just plan this as a Swamp 2. You know, it's a whole new engine. It can do things that the first one can't. So why throw out those new features that I kind of got carried away and was adding them even though I wasn't really going to be using them? So I worked on it for a little while as a Swamp 2. And it got more and more depressing. And the reason I'm saying it got depressing is because, you know, Swamp is a zombie-themed game, which means if Swamp 2 is then going to be a zombie-themed game, there's only so much you can do. Yeah. You know, zombies are not going to attack you in spaceships or in tanks, and zombies are not going to... I mean, I'm at a lack of examples here, but there's only so much stuff that zombies can do. I tried to mix it up in the original by saying, you know, as time goes on, they sort of mutate into these different things, but they're still basically just zombies, you know. And, you know, raiders were added in for ranged battles, but that's about it. You can't do a whole lot. And even though that worked at the time with Swamp, I don't think there was any other zombie-themed, especially not shooting games, when Swamp came out. There may have been, but I didn't know about them.
No, not that I'm aware.
But since then and now, like, there's all kinds of, I don't want to call them copycat games, that would be rude to other developers, but there's been a lot of games that are very, very close to the theme of Swamp, or at the very least, they're a bunch of zombies. Some of them even use sounds that are right out of Swamp.
Yeah.
You know, I think the official story is that they just happen to use the same sound packs, but I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. There's,
yeah.
You can play other games that are the exact same sounds even. So if I'm going to release a new game and if I'm shooting for it to be a big game, I don't, like, it's depressing to think the whole game is going to be limited to this, just zombies again. And then it's not the first of its kind game about zombies. It's like the 15th game that's going to be released about zombies. And nobody wants to be the 15th game about anything. You know, it loses the excitement.
Yeah.
So I got depressed enough by that that I kind of set that aside and thought, you know what? I need to brainstorm some other completely non-Swamp game that I can use this engine in. And I bounced around between a few different projects, and that's right around the time that springtime set in. And when springtime sets in, there's a million things that go wrong with my house and my friends and family's houses, and I am the go-to guy to work on all that stuff.
People that don't live in Michigan don't understand that all the time. Winter is rough, and you have to spend the springtime fixing what winter did to you, which is all
exactly pipes in your house burst and crack.
Yep.
You know, electrical stops working properly. I have to completely replace the roof of my garage, like down to the boards have to be replaced. Like, it's a ton of work. But yeah, so that's about that. I think I've caught everybody up to basically when I ran out of time this year, and that brings us to now, where I haven't had much time to do things.
Now, one thing I do want to say, that the reason I enjoy Swamp so much is not even the zombie. To be honest, I hate zombie games. I don't like the... I think it's so childish and stupid, but with Swamp, it's an audio game that has the feel of mainstream mechanics, which audio game developers are all mostly blind, and they don't play mainstream games. I mean, just mouse movement is completely foreign to all of them. And having that in Swamp with the game mechanics, I think that is what sets Swamp apart from any other. No one's going to clone that or try and make something similar because they can't. It's like they don't have, I don't know, you being sighted and having experience with mainstream games give you a completely different outlook than all these other audio game developers who don't have that outlook when they're creating games. And that's what sets Swamp apart for me.
I think that goes back to the whole idea that I don't really play audio games, so I approach with my own, you know. For me, when I made Swamp Multiplayer, for example, and it had the controls and it used the mouse, and I designed it exactly the way I would design the game for sighted players, like before I'd been in the audio games community. And I had people in the audio games community fighting me on all those decisions. They hated the mouse with a passion.
Yep.
They hated the controls with a passion. I mean, they hated all this stuff because it was completely different. And if I had played a bunch of, you know, audio game first-person shooters that already existed, I probably would have leaned more in the way they did things, just so that people were used to how the controls worked and how everything worked, and it wouldn't have been the same effect.
No, Swamp would not be what it is, no, at all. For me, a first-person shooter needs a mouse. You can't play it with arrows. Just
no,
there are still people who play Swamp with... They refuse to use a mouse. They just use the keyboard. They're fairly high level, but I don't get the fear of some people to actually use a mouse in the game. We just...
Yeah, I don't know. Do it.
I don't get it. I don't ever will. But it's a thing. Don't know how. But yeah, I can't do a first-person shooter. There are a couple FPSs out there now that are audio games, but they're all arrow mashing, and I have no interest in that. It's not simulating an FPS like the way an FPS should be working.
No, it's not as skill-based. Mm-mm. You know, I like the fact that Swamp doesn't help you at all. I mean, I'm very against that in games. I don't want there to be any kind of aim assistant or anything.
No.
If you miss by the tiniest hair, it's not going to give you any credit. You know what? That bullet missed. You're dead now.
No.
Zombie's going to kill you. I don't want any help at all.
One thing I am actually always have been surprised about Swamp, because it didn't fit with the difficulty, is you can actually hit zombies behind you with a gun. Which I don't know what the logic is behind it, but
there's
always
a bounding box.
Me that happens.
What that actually comes down to is that the zombie is able to step close enough to you, his bounding box of hitting him actually overlaps the end of your gun slightly, though you're facing the other way. So when you fire, you're hitting him.
So do you have any map or ideas for new maps, title weapons, armor, title armor, anything along those lines? Other additions to what is, or is that all going to be mainly scrapped due to the second, well, not Swamp 2, but a second whatever this other engine develops into.
Well, originally there were plans. The swamp maps as they are actually part of a much larger overall map that I had designed. Not that I had designed that it was ready to play, but I mean, I had sketched out this whole large world. And then the swamp maps that exist now are kind of pieces, chunks taken out of that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I already have the idea for the areas that would be in between maps we already have, or that would branch out a little bit further.
Yeah.
And, you know, other weapons and armors and things like that. Absolutely, things would have been added, but we hit that point where the current version, the code for the current versions was corrupted and destroyed, and it ruined all those plans, because I just don't think I have it in me to go back that far and just put in the work just to catch up, and then more work to take it forward. Yeah, it's when I could instead make a new game.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. But I do have to say, don't get depressed about Swamp, because what you have in Swamp is... For me, it's not the content, it's the gameplay that makes it unique. Even if there are a million other zombie shooters, you still have something that no one else is going to compete with.
Thank you.
I really don't play audio games, to be honest. I play SDW and Swamp. Those are my two games I play, because I'm not interested in most of them, because they're like a version of a 90s mainstream game. Old and kind of just very simplistic, not enough to grab my attention. I don't know, it takes more to get me invested in a game. And Swamp is one of the games that does that.
Well, you know what? I'm honored that my game made your top two list.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The top two list is, I'm really lazy for writing all this stuff out, and what games will actually make me do that? it's the two. The one thing I am curious about is, did you ever settle on anything with this new engine and actually sitting down and working in a specific direction with it?
Well, the engine itself, again, I haven't really found what I'm positive I'm going to use the engine for. I'll put it that way. I've got some ideas. I've played around with things going in different directions, which I tend to do, but I haven't completely decided. But with the engine itself, I have made compromises, and I think anyone who has sat down and to make their own game engine for something has hit some sort of a compromise at some stage.
Yeah.
Whether it be that, you know, well, if I do it this way, the inventories aren't going to synchronize as fast as I want, but it will improve online play. Like, there's always going to be something. And with this one, the way it is designed, I cannot have opening and closing doors that will correctly mask sound and AI movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be something that I solve later, but the way it's designed, I really can't have doors that open and close. And at first I had no reason to ever have it. I mean, Swamp doesn't have doors that open and close. I didn't really have any desire to have doors in Swamp 2 that would open and close. Because what's going to happen is you'll have a person that will sit in the doorway closest to a safe zone, or whatever the equivalent in Swamp 2 would be to a safe zone, and they'll just open and close the door all day, just so everybody else has to hear it. That's what would happen.
True.
So
that's
why I even have doors. That's exactly what happened.
I sit in the safe zone and unload and reload my weapon nonstop, because people sit in there and they don't go out on the map, so I just sit there and reload and unload.
Yep. That's hilarious. But that's what would happen. So, Eric, why do I even need doors, right? So whatever. So, but then once I started thinking of what other games could I make that are not Swamp or Swamp 2, you know what? Every now and then an idea comes about where I would like something that would be the equivalent of a door opening and closing, or a wall being broken down, or in some way the topography of the map being changed, or the arrangement of walls and buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are some compromises, and who knows, between now and whenever I have another game, I may have gone back and redesigned some of those things to get rid of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's always going to be a compromise.
How completed is it, would you say? If you had to put a...
The engine?
Yeah.
It might excite some people to say that I took the sound effect from Swamp that was the fish tank, right? And I put the fish tank in a sample room and built... So this room then had a hallway that came off of it that made, I think, 3 or 4 90-degree turns. Very long, winding hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And then it led to the outside. So I put myself into this game, and it was the only sound in the whole game was that fish tank. Now, again, it is really whining around a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And I shut off the screen so I could see nothing, and I am terrible at audio games, so this whatever whatever I'm able to navigate, anybody else would do even better. I faintly heard the sound of the fish tank, and I steered toward it, and I walked my way down the hallway, made every turn, never hit a wall, and got all the way into the room and stood in front of the fish tank, only based on the sound bouncing off the walls.
Wow.
And so, to me, the sound stuff was 90% of the work on the new engine, so I'm awesome. Very happy with how that turned out.
That is good. This is very encouraging to know, because it's, I think a lot of people have started to think that Swamp is dead, and there's not going to be any more development on it. And to know that there's actually something, and it's going to be something amazing, is extremely encouraging for everyone. I, for me, and I know everyone else is going to be excited about it.
Yeah, I guess they weren't that far off, right, when they were saying maybe no new developments or whatever, because I kind of have confirmed in this interview that with Swamp 1, there's not much else I can do.
Well,
I can make some
server
tweaks. Right.
Yeah.
There's another something coming. Yeah, something coming.
That's the important thing. That there's something new coming that's going to be similar, not the same, but similar.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to skip ahead to the questions that people told me to ask you, and some of these are interesting. The first one is from Bart, and he wants to know what kept you going when all the hackers kept attacking the game and causing so much trouble. What was your, what kept you plugging away at it? I think you kind of touched on this earlier, but you can elaborate on it if you want to.
I think I kept trying to just focus on, you know, the good that the game was doing, the people who enjoyed it versus the people who were causing problems. But there's a part of me that was just being spiteful, and I didn't want the hackers to win.
Yeah.
That might actually some of what pushed me forward.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And Abrix wants to know if you have any plans to rebuild the player base of Swamp. I don't know how exactly you can answer this, but if you have an answer, yes. If not, no.
That's a tricky one.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very hard to rebuild it, only because I think the game has been around for so long that unless I completely recoded the game to have a different feel, the people who have left are the people who kind of got out of the game what they wanted to, and you know, they're onto something else because it's something new. And it's the same game, so it's kind of hard to pull people back and say, hey, I can't like promise them something new and exciting if they've already played the game for years and then fell away.
Exactly. This one's from Jimmy Dub, but I'm going to moderate it or change it slightly. He wanted to know if there's any active plans to use the other sounds in the weapons folder, but I don't even know if that's possible now, if it's all client-side or client-server or just server-side. So is that even a possibility with current Swamp?
There are some things I can do that are very clunky on the server to change things. There's like some events, you know, hey, there's a Christmas song playing in the safe zone, or you know, I can do some things without actually changing the code for the game, but I'll have to just short answer it by saying no, I'm not gonna be able to do anything with the rest of the sounds. There were plans at some point, all those sounds were in there for a reason. Originally people got a hold of those sounds because when I copied Swamp into the zip to post online, I hit the wrong keyboard command and it copied all of the sounds, not just the ones that actually fit into the game. And then even though I think more up-to-date versions do not have all the sounds, like the unused ones also, it's not like, you know, when you unzip the new version and it replaces your old version of the game, it's not going to delete the folders that aren't, you know, in the new zip. So yeah, practically everybody has a whole bunch of sounds like for weapons that Kai took the time to to edit and work on. And there's zombie types that he worked on. I mean, Kai did a ton of work that never made it into the game. No one's ever going to know exactly all the work he put into it. He put a lot of work into it. You know, those were at some point planned things to add, and it just never happened.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as it is now, that does need, it is client side as well, server to add new weapons.
Yeah, if I wanted to add a brand new weapon, so I can add modified versions of existing weapons. Like sometimes people come on and they'll be like, oh, I have a candy cane launcher or, you know, the Apronic chainsaw or something, which has different stats, but it's essentially the same weapon.
I see.
I can do that, but I can't add a whole new weapons.
That makes sense. All right, Meteor Shower wanted to ask you, again, you kind of touched on this before, but after the success of Swamp, what are your plans moving forward with audio games?
I think I'm going to have to just rebuild my reputation a bit. because I've had so many times now where I haven't produced anything, or like long, I had long gaps of time, even when Swamp was still being actively developed, where mm-hmm. the only thing I was ever doing was just maintaining Swamp. So yeah. I lost, and then you come forward into now where I haven't really worked on much of anything, or I'm working on the newer game engine, but nobody's seen anything from me. Mm-hmm. There, I used to have a reputation of producing a lot of small games, like on a regular basis, and I've completely lost that reputation now, and I would like to build that back up. I just don't know how to do it while still having plans to work on the larger game too. So it's a balancing act, and I haven't really figured out what I'm going to do.
Trying to figure out how to balance it. Sounds like a headache. This is a time-related one, but we just recently had the wrapping paper event 2 or 3 days ago. And in the past, it was on the 7th of July, and Jimmy was wondering if it's also going to happen on the 7th, like it has in the past.
The wrapping paper thing was funny. Somebody Skyped me the other day, and it was a Skype message popped up, and it said, "Hey, I love the event. It was awesome." I was like, "All right, that was weird." You know, and then a little later, another one popped up and was like, "Oh, yay, I got such and such. That was cool. Keep it up." Oh, yeah, that's weird, too. And maybe by the third, fourth, or fifth one that popped up, I thought I should go check the server. And there was some old code in there that just by sheer coincidence of how things line up, I mean, we're talking code that's years old, it lined up in such a way that it glitched and re-triggered some old event completely randomly. I had no idea the wrapping paper event was going on. Like, yeah. I literally had no idea until it was done and over with, and it was completely a glitch. There was no plan to it.
It was fun. I can tell you that. It was lots of fun.
It's funny that a complete glitch, like, runs an event for me. I mean, that's really weird. That is what happened. It was not planned.
So is it going to be happening again, or will it not be?
I do the events, you know, from time to time. It's usually if there's some kind of an excuse to do the event.
Yeah.
And see, technically I could do events all the time. Like I could do one a week. It's just the effort to set it up and then monitor it to make sure nothing blows up when I first run the event. Cause you know, when you're coding, like when I'm coding on a new event, right? The server is running. Everybody's playing it. I can't modify people's clients because they've got the clients, obviously. I can't release any patch. So everything I do has to be server-sided. Now, to any programmers listening, they can probably imagine that you can code changes on a server, right? Mm-hmm. The way I have the server running, it's in the programming environment. It is not compiled. So the code, I can change it as it's literally running. And a lot of developers have never worked in that kind of an environment. Yeah. So if you do a single typo, bam, you just crashed everybody.
Wow.
And if I start typing a sentence, let's say I'm typing a line of code, and I'm going to call it the eye of the code, you know, as the compiler actually gets to a line of code to run. Mm-hmm. If it tries to run that line of code that I am still typing, bam, crashes, everything's gone. So what I have to do is, if I'm really feeling brave, and it's a part of code that I think is only going to run, like, it's only going to run if a guy opens the gift that he just found, right? Yeah, I probably got 2 minutes before somebody finds another one. I play the probably game a lot. Like, I think I could type in the 2 lines of code I need to change, right? Oh, so I go to that spot, and I type like a wild man. And I've got to be careful with typos, and I just type out the 2 lines of code, hope for the best, and then boom, all right, cool, it works. And then if it's something that's happening, like if code has to be changed in an area that's going to be run all the time, like let's say every time a person types a slash command, regardless of the slash command, well, then I'm going to type it into Notepad, cut it, go to the spot in code, and paste, and just hope that when it pasted it, the eye wasn't reading that exact spot at that exact moment. So every now and then...
You're doing it this way? Because this makes no sense to me.
I'm collecting gray hairs. That's what it is. Yeah. I do it that way. If you think back to when Swamp was being developed on constantly, even when people didn't see changes to the game, I was always coding on the server. I mean, it was a daily basis. So if I didn't do it this way, then what I would be doing is I would have to code a server separately, like a make a change to it. I'd have to test it separately with, you know, maybe a handful of volunteers or something. Mm-hmm. Then I'd have to shut down the main server with whatever anybody was doing, copy the new server over, and then run it. So there would have been these like 10 to 15 minute downtimes everywhere. I mean, they would have been happening multiple times a day, every single day for years. See. People would have hated it. But now I can just add the code right in as I go. And all of a sudden, there's a new feature. People have probably even noticed that while they'll be playing and somebody goes, hey, if you type slash whatever, this thing happens. Mm-hmm. And they type it and it works. Mm-hmm. And it's because I literally changed the code right there while they were playing and nobody ever knows the difference. I think I actually got sidetracked on what the original question was.
If the wrapping paper event was going to be on the 7th as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now I remember where I got sidetracked. So, yeah, I could technically do events all the time, but it takes effort to set them up. And I have to be there to watch it to make sure I didn't screw something up when coding on the fly like that.
Yeah.
So because of that, I just don't have the time every day or every week to sit down or the patience to sit at the server and run these events. So I have to have a good excuse to be talked into it. You know?
I was under the false impression that they happened automatically. Like all your events automatically went on certain dates. Because I think someone was telling me like the Easter event doesn't happen on Easter all the time. Because it's just set to run on a certain
date. There's a couple of main events that I did do that for. At some point in the past, I got all excited and thought, hey, I'll code these in advance, you know, and I don't have to worry about it. I can, like, not worry about it for a year, right? Well, I did that, and then I never took that code out. So then the next year was, like, a few days before Easter, and it happened to line up on the day that Easter was the last year. All of a sudden, boom, the Easter event starts. And I'm like, well, that sucks. So I canceled doing the actual Easter event because the one from last year just popped up. And, I'm trying to get away from the automated stuff if I remember and find where the automated things are coded, you know, to actually remove them. But I'm trying to get away from that only because it has problems. Not all holidays fall on the same day every year.
Yeah. I can tell you that the events are – it's so much fun because it breaks up the everyday activity on Swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Go grab loot. Go do a mission. Get some limbos. Go grab more loot. The server – amount of people online on the server completely balloons, and it's so much more fun if they
give
any sort of encouragement to not every week, but they are. It's so nice to have something new, which I don't see in other online persistent games for events.
Well, hopefully that will inspire me to actually, you know, get off my butt and do some more events.
I agree. Now, one thing this is one of my questions that I sent to myself to ask you. Is there any method to the madness of you randomly handing out gifts?
Usually, if, like, my wife says, hey, we're out of paper towel, can you go down to the basement and get paper towel? I will go down there, and I actually have it set up, as crazy as this sounds, that if I push enter twice on the keyboard in rapid succession, it will give everybody currently signed on a gift.
My God.
So I'll lean over and tap the enter key twice, pick up the whatever it is I needed to get, and I'll walk back upstairs. So, The frequency with which my wife asked me to go downstairs and get stuff is how often I give everybody gifts.
Oh, that is just beautiful. I had this theory that it was in whenever someone bought a gamer account, you handed out a gift, but that is not as close to paper towel.
I'm more random than that.
That is just beautiful. This is going to be coming from Buzz. He wants to know if you feel things are more balanced, especially as they pertain to hardcore. And then as a follow-up to that, will any punishments be given for the current cheating that's going on with hardcore?
A lot of people probably know that I haven't played Swamp in like a million years.
Yeah.
It's been so long since I've actually sat down to play the game. And when I did, I didn't play hardcore very much. I mean, because hardcore is harder to test in short spurts. You know what I mean? It's not like I need to test a mission to go get some loot versus the kinds of things you do as a hardcore player. So I've always had to rely on feedback from the hardcore players to kind of tell me how things were going. And because of that, I can't really comment on whether or not it's more balanced now. I would have to get people's opinions on that. So I suppose if the people asking me that question, if they don't think it's more balanced, then I guess the answer is not more balanced.
I can add in one thing with what hardcore has become now is a group of people who are all friends, own forts, and they never attack one another, and they never do anything with their forts because nothing can happen to them. They're just there forever. They put food in it, whatever. And it's just four clans that own forts, and they're all friends with one another, so it's just all sitting in the safe zone or sitting in a fort collecting XP, not doing anything. It's
yeah,
not the war zone that I would dream of hardcore being where everyone's fighting for clans, and you actually, when you have clans, it's hard to keep them up. It just seems to be a, it's become stagnant, I guess would be the best way to say.
And that's a, that's another one of those side effects of the smaller population we have in the audio games community. Because in a mainstream game, if you have, let's say you had, if Swamp existed in mainstream, right, then you would have almost no possibility that your clan was composed entirely of your own real life friends.
Exactly true.
And then even if it was, there'd be so many clans competing for forts that you couldn't just make alliances with them all and have everybody be happy. There would always be war. You'd always have double crossing. You'd always have the fact that half of your people in your clan are just people you know on the internet that you're not actually very close with. Everybody in the audience community is generally close because it's a small, tight-knit group. You wouldn't have that. It would just be some name that you're used to, you know, and they'll turn on you. You would have all that stuff, and you just, you don't get it with a small, tight-knit group. Yeah. And I don't know how to get that to happen.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, I guess the best thing to do would be to listen to the people that do play it and see what their ideas are. Because like you said, I don't know enough about it because I don't play hardcore. I just go off what I'm hearing and seeing from other people, of course.
You know, maybe I should jump in and say there is a way I might be able to do it, but it's not worth doing. I could say, let's say, between the various clans, I could simulate server messages that sounds like they're throwing insults at each other, get them all pissed off, you know? What'd you say about my mom? What'd you say, you know?
And way better than you think.
Get them all mad. Yeah, get them all mad, and then, you know, they'd all have chat logs to prove all the horrible crap that so-and-so said about them, and this person and that person, get them all mad, and then they'll actually fight over the forts. But as soon as people figured out it was me, it would I'm sure it would go bad for me.
If you pick the right people to have send back and forth, like Buzz to Kookaburra, there would be a issue right away. People would be getting into fights really quick. It, rather genius, but yeah, probably not worth it.
I can't say that there hasn't been at least one time that I picked one person and sent a message that seemed like a private whisper from another person that said something like, "You know I love you." And then just see what kind of thing happens. That may have happened at least once.
That is beautiful.
And it is interesting to watch how long it goes before it gets sorted out that it's just people messing with them.
Something like that coming from Hannibal would be completely normal. Because we get stuff like that all the time from him, depending on how much he's drinking that night. Now, one thing Hamada was wondering is if there's anything to fix the slowdown in warehouse missions, or is that here to stay? Where you run so slow in them.
The slowdown is a client-sided issue, as much as people hate when I say that. And it's not, and people say, oh, well, you know, I've got a faster computer than this person, and his runs better than mine. Games don't always just boil down to who has the faster computer, as much as it should. I will be the first person to say Swamp is not coded in the most ideal way, and it's because it's a hodgepodge of different ideas thrown together at different times. It's a spaghetti code mess. And as a result, you can get weird things where the video card that you have might not handle some ways code's done the same way as the other guy's does, or sound cards are different, or other things are happening, and it can affect the performance of the game in ways that is not as black and white as saying you have a faster computer than I have, so your game should run faster. I wish it worked that way, but unfortunately, it doesn't. And other people who, you know, I'm sure there's other developers who will hear this and think, you know, we'll be all happy, and they'll think, oh, well, my games actually do work that way. Eh, well, if you push them to their limit, maybe they don't. Yeah. You just haven't had the game pushed. Like, it's not using as much of the computer to realize that there are those distinctions.
Question from Jimmy again. He has quite a few in here. Good for him. He's wondering if there's going to be more quests. I mean, all this is, I'm coming from the perspective of with what you have to work with from the server, so just answer it
right.
That are there going to be more quests for Swamp, and will they have another purpose besides just the locker with the quest credits?
Quests are something I can add on the server side, so if I was inspired to do it and wanted to, I could literally go down to my basement and code out, you know, 20 more quests. Mm-hmm. I don't see myself doing it. I probably shouldn't say that because people are going to get upset. But I don't see myself doing it only because I kind of am focusing more on, you know, what will be the next project instead of how do I help this one limp along a little bit further with quests, which are already, from what I've heard from people, are very unpopular. It's not like great feature of the game that every people don't play it just to play Quest, you know?
Yeah. No, you do get the credits for your locker. Which yeah. I've been doing.
And the credits, I had no idea what to do with the credits. I
figured.
They were coded in at some point. I thought, you know, I'll figure out a way to use these things at some point. And I was thinking, okay, at some point is in like a few weeks after I added in Quests.
Yeah.
And then everything happened and Quests never got worked on. And suddenly people are sitting around with hundreds or thousands of Quest points and nothing to do with it. I'm like, well, yeah. I better do something. And here, there's a locker. Be happy, you know. I feel a little crappy sometimes when I'm giving people stuff that's clearly just this thoughtless, you know, gesture on my part. Where I'm just like, here, just entertain yourselves. I do feel bad, but it's better than nothing, I guess.
You add something little like that, and it actually does make the player base happy. That's why I'm asking, and I'm actually interested in that.
Well, that's good because I feel like everybody just. I just feel like whenever I do that, people are sitting there thinking, "Oh, he's just trying to shut us up." You know?
No, I was really like, I read in the forums, I was like, "Damn, there's a locker system, and I'm going to get on the game now."
That's cool.
Even little new stuff. It's amazing how much it will affect the game because it gets monotonous doing the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Like the events, it's something that mixes it up, and it is. It makes it a new game for that day, or however long the new edition lasts. And the last one, from Jimmy, he wants to know, what causes the game to eat two fucking pairs of running equipment in one day?
He didn't want me to say anything, but that's completely Hannibal. Oh. I let him decide whether those items would remain in your inventory or not, and he, you know, I tried talking him out of it, but he was being a real dick about it. And
now the question
he
is,
took
did
him away.
He get the running gear? So Hannibal got it. So he needs to.
No, actually, Hannibal was just like, I don't care if nobody gets them. I don't want him to have them. And they were gone.
I see. One of those was actually mine, so I'm rather upset about this as well.
Should I answer that question legitimately?
Sure. Why not?
Sure. I mean, it's complicated to narrow down the exact cause, because if it was the same exact cause for items disappearing every single time it was predictable, then it would have been solved before now. But it comes down to lag at the worst times.
I see.
If you get lag at the worst possible time, then the packets that get sent back and forth, it can, you know, obviously you have in fail safes to try to have the game detect when a packet was not completely sent. But if you end up with just the correct spot where things get cut, it can not recover and not realize. Right. Like, it won't know, okay, I need to request the bits that were missing. It just flat out doesn't even know the item was going to be there. And you can get issues, and it can delete things. And usually it's the most recent things you've picked up, or it's the things that in the way your inventory is the list of your inventory, it's stuff towards the end. It might be something you've had for a little while, but if it happens to fall at the end, it can. Usually, that's the part that gets cut off or damaged.
Is there anything we as players can do to lower the chance of it happening?
It doesn't work every time, so there's always going to be an example of a person pops up and says, "That's complete crap. You know, I did exactly what Apron said, and it didn't work." But having a smaller inventory historically cuts that down by so much that it's not even funny, and it's one of the reasons that the locker system was on the table to be added when it was added, because I thought, if I can get these decorative items out of people's inventories, at the very least, that can cut the inventories down by, you know, two-thirds, just because, you know, there's people running around, and he's got Star Wars action figures, and he's got Easter eggs, and he's got all this other kind of stuff, and those items that are custom items don't compress, because they're plain text.
I see.
So they actually take up even more space than they would just in sheer number of items. So, yeah, I mean, the locker system was meant to cut down on it. I have had many fewer reports of people losing items than I did before the locker system. So I think it is working. It's just
better.
It's not a 100% fix, though.
Nope.
And you're always going to have a guy running around with 54 billion of every type of ammo. And you're always going to get people that just want to collect mass amounts of things, and then they kind of get themselves back up to that like dangerous line even with the locker system.
One thing that I just thought of that I've been meaning to ask you for a long time but never had the chance is, how do you feel about people using storage characters? Because you've said multiple times swap is meant to be you die, but with the storage characters,
yeah,
you die, you get restored.
That's one of those things where when I set up where people could trade items, and for the longest time you could not trade items with people, I knew as soon as the ability was there for people to trade items, storage characters would be a thing. So even though I didn't want to come out and say, yes, you can do it, because if I did, then everyone would do it. I, you know, figured, hey, I can buy a little bit of time where not everybody thinks of it, right?
About a day.
Yeah, I know. But I knew that that was going to happen, and it is one of several reasons why it took as long as it did before I let people share items.
Right.
Because there is no way to let people share items and not have storage characters become a thing.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Now we're going to get into the quick take section. This is just going to be some quick questions that really have nothing to do with Swamp at all or programming, but we're going to see what your answers are to them. First one, what's your favorite color?
Changes often. I suppose my answer right now would be blue. And I know some of the viewers are thinking, what is blue? But that's a terrible, terrible joke. So I won't say it.
What's your favorite food?
If I had to narrow it down, I would say ham, not like seasoned or glazed, just like literally a giant, like 20-pound spiraled ham. And then I'll just pick at it for like
those
a week.
Those are delicious. As long as someone doesn't overcook them. What is your favorite mainstream game?
I am a big fan of Minecraft, again, because of the freedom. Some people aren't going to like that answer because they'll say it's less of a game and more of a simulation. Because, again, there's not really win and lose conditions. So if I had to pick... it's a great game, though. But if I had to pick a game that's more of a traditional this-is-a-game with a win and lose, I would say Lords of the Realm 2. Made back in the 90s, it's like my favorite game.
Okay. That's a good answer, then. Something that's a deep pull. That's always good. If you could meet any person, dead or alive, who would it be, and what's your reason?
Probably Mike Rowe. He used to be on the show Dirty Jobs. I don't think the show's still going. In the show, he's just really down to earth and funny, and I think he'd be an interesting person to just have a conversation with.
For a guy like you, it would be good. He has a quick 5-minute long once a week podcast that he does, by the way.
So you could still get
more Mike Rowe if you want more Mike Rowe. Who is your favorite author?
I don't read. I can, but I've never actually enjoyed, you know, reading.
So we're going to put down Dr. Seuss.
Okay.
What is your favorite movie?
I do like a lot of movies, but The Last Samurai is probably my favorite, or at least it's up there high enough that I can't think of anything better right now.
That works. Your favorite animated TV show or cartoon? Or movie?
I think in the past I would have said Family Guy, but it's got to be Rick and Morty now. I love the dark humor.
With no commitments or anything else to do, what would you be choosing to do with your time?
If I didn't need to work?
Yep.
What would you want? I would definitely stuff a backpack with supplies and things that I might need. I'd walk off into the forest and just live there. Build a log cabin eventually and catch my own food. Yeah, that's totally what I'd do.
I'm on board 100% with that answer. All right, this one, there's a right and wrong answer. We'll see if you get it. If the color 3 is blue and the number 12 is a rectangle, what is the number 7?
I have to say, it's going to shatter the illusion that all the listeners have, but you did send me these questions in advance so that I could look them over before we started talking, you know, so I'd at least not make a fool of myself.
Yeah.
And when I came up with my answer to this, I came up with the answer for how it is written, not how you said it. So I'm going to have to answer for how it's written because I think I have a good answer.
Okay.
For how it's said, I'd have to fumble through it a little bit. The reason I say how it's written is because if you see the number 12, if you say 12, it means 6 plus 6 is 12. If you see it written, then it doesn't necessarily mean 12. It's 1 and 2. Right? Okay. Like if you see the number 10, it's 10, or if you're talking binary, it's 2. It depending on your numbering system, it doesn't have the same value. So I did have a little bit of time to think this over. I probably put a good 20 minutes into this one because I loved the question. I loved it. So my answer, I'll explain the answer, but my answer is a square.
Okay.
The What I was saying, or the way I looked at this, is you said the color 3 is blue, which tells me that this is one of those, you know, in a world where, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's one of those type of questions. So mm-hmm. in a world where the color 3 is blue, that means they don't use the word blue to describe blue. They actually named it 3. Mm-hmm. So when I was I'm thinking back, every civilization on our planet, to my knowledge, I could be wrong, when it came to naming colors early in the civilization's histories, it was always red, then green or yellow, then blue. Blue is always the third color that was actually given a name, because it's simply the progression of every society we have. So I thought, that can't be a coincidence. So that would mean that this civilization was mathematically minded enough, and they thought so highly of numbers, that even in the very primitive days when they were naming colors, they used the number in which they had come up with these colors. So I thought, all right, so these are very mathematically minded people. If that's the case, they would almost certainly not be using a base 10 number system. It's just, I don't see it happening. Use some kind of an anti-prime. Yeah, you'd use like an anti-prime, like a base 12, where it can be divided in many different ways. Like, you know, you can have instead of just 12, you can divide it into 2 and 6 or 3 mm-hmm. and 4. You know, you can cut it into many different even pieces. 10's tricky. How do you cut 10? You can cut 10 in half, 2 and 5, and other than that, everything's messy.
Yeah.
It's just not good for cutting. And that's why when we were more advanced as a civilization and we came up with things like clocks and so forth, we use these anti-prime numbers like 60 for minutes and 12 for hours and mm-hmm. Because you can divide it. So that's probably what they would have gone. So when I read the number 12 as it's written, 1, 2, I didn't see it as the value 12. I thought in a base 12 math system, that would actually be the value of 14, right? Okay. So if 14 is a rectangle, 7 happens to be half of that. So I thought, that can't be a coincidence. Like, this was all meshing together. I have to be on the right track. So half of a rectangle is either going to be, you know, a triangle, because you can cut on an angle, or it's mm-hmm. going to be a smaller rectangle, depending on how wide this rectangle is. But I thought those are both really sloppy answers. So a square, if you put two squares together, it becomes a rectangle. So a mm-hmm. square is a perfect, nice, neat answer to this question. So that's my answer.
Oh, my dear God. Okay, you put roughly 20 minutes more time thinking of that answer than I did writing the question.
Oh, I had this vision that you would come up with this perfectly crafted puzzle.
No,
oh,
I literally just wrote it out as a random nonsense question, and you just made it make perfect sense, which my mind is completely blown right now.
Well, what was the answer you were thinking of? Oh, pomegranate.
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
I know. What were you thinking? Oh, man, that makes this next question just so pitiful. That's the last question, but this is only for us in Michigan. Is it okay. Go Spartans or go Blue?
Well, I am not really a sports fan. I'll jump in and play basically anything, but I've never found joy in watching other people play, so I've never been a huge sports nut. But because I went to University of Michigan, I guess I have to say go Blue.
Did you really? Oh, you are now the greatest audio game developer in the history of audio games.
Ooh,
that
wow.
is the correct answer.
That is awesome.
Without
Sweet.
A doubt. All right, awesome. And that is the conclusion of our interview. Do you have anything else you wanted to add before we shut it down?
No, I can't think of anything. It's a lot
good
of fun,
deal.
Though.
Good deal. Good. All right, and maybe we'll be doing this again when you come out with your big next Swamp 2 or insert name here with your new engine, and I will definitely be looking forward to playing that.